Thanks for your invitation to this symposium, and I'm going to present some clinical data. So I guess to this audience, there's no need to recall the importance of the gut microbiota. This has been discussed since this morning. It's important in physiology and change in a series of chronic diseases. You have heard this morning from Dushko Erlis that indeed we have another genome with millions of bacterial genes, and Dushko presented this morning this work. And it's true that what was discussed is that the gut microbiota basically is very important and in the equilibrium between health and diseases, that it can be shaped by host genetics, food, microbial exposure, and some pharmaceuticals. So I'm going to discuss the relationship with obesity and cardiometabolic risk. We have seen also the importance of data coming from axenic mice, and in this example, these mice resist to high-fat diet-induced glucose intolerance and insulin resistance, and it has been shown and just also recalled by the last speaker that causality was brought from gut microbiome transfer here in this work from Jeff Gordon. And also that what remains in importance of the diet and the phenotype, basically it's better transmitted on a low-fat and high-fiber diet. So what I want to basically discuss with you is the situation of human beings and results of clinical intervention. So also what I've been discussed is the fact that obesity, overweight and obesity is associated, basically it's a heterogeneous disease with many phenotypes and is associated with immune inflammatory complication that you can see here. And there is a very important immunological link complication. And then the question that is discussed is this importance of dysbiosis in obesity-linked complication with a low inflammatory component or situation. And many of obesity-associated diseases are assessed now in the context of the gut microbiota study. So again, what has been discussed this morning is the importance of diversity. And obesity is indeed associated with less diversity. And we've contributed recently with Dushko to show that indeed, when you look at a population of overweight and obese subjects, you have a fraction of the patient with indeed a lower gene distribution. And this was shown not only in as you can see here, in more than 300 subjects from the METAID program, but also in a shorter cohort with less subjects, about 50 subjects, where you retrieve a fraction of the population with lower gene count. And we observe that in both groups, indeed, low gut bacterial gene count was associated with modification of insulin-resistant surrogates, as well as increased dyslipidemia and a more inflammatory phenotype. Basically, when you compare these subjects to a group of individuals with high bacterial genes. So we went a little bit further recently on the dyslipidemia, and that was a consistent phenotype. And we perform phospholipid analysis in ICANN, in our institute platform here, where 7 phospholipid subclasses were studied. So as you can see here, individuals with low gene count had indeed for some of the lipid subspecies an increased amount of these lipid subspecies. And we are exploring a little bit more what that means. And actually, some of these lipid phospholipid species were associated with liver diseases. And what is particularly interesting here is that some of these species, like PG here, are basically compounds of the gut bacteria membrane, and especially from bacteria, gram-positive bacteria. So we are exploring deeper this. The other aspect comparing low and high gene count individuals is that it seems that low gene count individuals had higher prevalence of pro-inflammatory bacteria, including some of these group here, such as Bacteroides and several species of Clostridium genus, you can see here, while high gene count individuals had higher prevalence of anti-inflammatory species, such as F. prosnitzii here. So the point I want to discuss here is whether or not we can reverse and modify the diversity of the gut microbiome, either by dietary intervention or bariatric surgery we heard about in the previous talk. So I'm sure you recall this paper from Jeff Gordon group, who showed that basically if you followed for 1 year a relatively small group of individuals, you will have modification of the equilibrium between Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes, and progressively obese individuals during the restrictive diet reach the level of lean individuals. You probably know also that this ratio between the change of this ratio between Firmicutes and Bacteroides, the test was discussed also by several groups. So some years ago now, we decided to perform a clinical intervention that was an energy restriction diet followed by a weight maintenance program. So the energy restriction diet was particular in a sense that it was not only diminished in global energy, but also enriched in fibers, in proteins, and in carbohydrates with a low glycemic index. So basically, when you do this type of intervention, you have this type of modification with a diminished energy, change in energy intake, you have diminution of fat mass, diminution of adipocyte diameters, change in lipids such as LDL cholesterol, and improve insulin sensitivity here. You have a surrogate of insulin sensitivity, which is the OMA, and you have diminution of inflammation. So first of all, and basically to our surprise, we were able in these 50 subjects to make groups based on their usual consumption. So what you can see here is that this person could be separated based on you know, what characterized their food behavior. So basically, we had three clusters. You can see one, two, and three. And the cluster one was characterized by people consuming highly, you can look here, factors like sugars and potatoes and chips, while you had here a cluster three, a group of individuals characterized by a high level of consumption of fibers, and you can see that with the consumption of vegetable soup and et cetera. So basically, this was based on 26 food groups. So then we asked whether at baseline these guys could have differences. So the first observation we made was, as you can see here, is that in the three groups, we had also differences in age. Basically, the group of women consuming, I would say, a more healthy cluster, a more healthy diet, sorry, while they had a similar body mass index, you can see that the age was higher compared to younger people characterized by a less healthy food intake patterns. So, and then if you look on some cardiovascular risk factors, such as cholesterol or LDL cholesterol, the healthier cluster, I would say, as expected, has basically a lower cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, and soluble CD14. So what about bacterial gene richness? So basically, it was the other way around, where the healthier cluster had increase in gene richness as baseline in this group. So it seemed that the healthier dietary pattern was associated with higher bacterial gene richness, which might partly account for the bitter phenotype observed in high gene count individual. Then the next question was whether we were able to modify the gene richness after the dietary intervention. And as you can see here, while during the intervention, the high gene count individual remained a little bit, remained stable, I mean, did not change so much, there was a clear increase in gut microbiome richness during the intervention, but it was not sufficient to reach the level of those with the high gene counts. So the increase was about 30%. So then the question is whether or not these guys with high or low gene counts had a similar change in their bioclinical parameters. So basically, again, when you do this type of dietary intervention, you have an improvement, as I showed before, of many of these cardiometabolic risk factors. And what you can see here is that subjects with low gene count in weight never reach the level of improvement of those with high gene count individuals. They remain always higher, depending on the phenotype. So, and then if we look a little bit further, this is a PCA analysis based on the kinetic comparison between bioclinical variables and some gut bacterial groups that were basically annotated after counting the genes. You can see that some of the groups were associated with some metabolites, some bioclinical factors you can see here, like some of these groups here were more associated with corpulence and insulin sensitivity parameters, over more with food intake, and or over with inflammation. And I'm just a little focus on one group here, where you can see that using this type of representation, we are able to see some gene groups that associate with some food intake patterns for food intake consumption, and others, for example, this one here, Ruminococcus, associate with the level of interleukin 6. All these other groups here, this cluster, again, associate with total caloric intake, and others with corpulence-related factors. So then the question we ask in this study is whether all relationship between bioclinical variables and bacterial gene clusters depend on food intake. And the response is it depends on the type of association. Basically, when you look at a series of parameters related to body composition, for example, you have one-third of the association that actually depend on food intake consumption. While others, here that was a group associated with inflammatory parameters, and I showed you an example for interleukin 6, it seems not to depend, actually, in this linear mixed model, not to depend on so much on food intake consumption. Another aspect is related to lipid metabolism. You see that a lot of the association we found was indeed highly dependent on food intake consumption. So that's something we need to dissect more now. So another aspect, in order to ask the question whether we can basically change or reverse the low diversity found in obese individuals, is indeed the bariatric surgery. So as we have heard in the last talk, is that there are several bariatric surgery models, such as banding, sleeve gastrectomy, Roux-en-Y, and actually this procedure, in addition to improve a lot weight and lead to weight loss, there is improvement in cardiometabolic risk, as well as modification in systemic and tissue and inflammation. And actually, at Pitié-Salpêtrière Hospital, we have an active file of 1,500 subjects followed for bariatric surgery. And this is just an example in a sub-analysis where, as a trial some years ago, we started to follow this subject quite at early stage after a gastric bypass here. So you can see before, 1, 3, and 6 months after bariatric surgery. So we perform dietary assessment in this subject, phenotypic exploration, microanalysis of their subcutaneous adipose tissue, and to start, we perform a very specific study examining the change of 7 bacterial species. That was the first observation that was then followed by paro-sequences of sequencing of gut microbiota. So basically, when you do this type of intervention, and this is not a scoop, we know that this decreases a lot calorie restriction as a whole, but not only a total calorie restriction, but also qualitative aspect of food. Basically, people completely change their way of eating. There is diminution in weight together to diminish leptin, as well as this has been said before, improve glycemia and inflammation. So in the first limited study we did, the idea was to look at the change of seven bacterial groups. And in the first observation we made, and I showed that before, there was an improvement in metabolic factors, diminished BMI, fat mass, leptin, and insulin, and some association, either negative with some E. coli, again, this was discussed before, as well as positive association with bifido and lactobacteria. And we had also association with low-grade inflammation parameters, and especially this species here, Faecalobacterium prausnitzii, was basically diminished in seven type 2 diabetic subjects and improved after the bariatric surgery. And again, what we observed is that a part of the association we've seen between gut bacterial component and bioclinical parameters were dependent, but not all, of food intake. Then we extended these first studies by a pyrosequencing analysis, and as you can see here, and you have the individual changes in these 30 subjects, we had indeed an increase in gut microbiome richness at 3 and 6 months after bariatric surgery. And looking a little bit, so basically about 50 bacterial genera initially not detected before the intervention were found after gastric bypass. And about nearly 40% basically belong to proteobacteria. And that's something we have seen before, especially in the previous talk, that it seemed that this type of gut bacterial factors are frequently retrieved, increased after surgery. What was also very surprising is that some of species we found are periodontal species. And we don't know what that means. And for example, after surgery, we frequently recommend to these subjects to basically change their way of eating and spend more time having the food in the mouth. So we don't know. I mean, we need to look at this better. So when we look at the level of the genera, basically it was clear that before and after bariatric surgery were separated depending on a number of genera. And you can see that the profile could be different based on the bacterial groups. While it seems that some of these genera basically seems to stabilize after 6 months, other seems to continue to increase after bariatric surgery. And it was the same for upregulated genera or downregulated genera. And what I want to say here is that at 6 months after bariatric surgery, people basically continue to improve their metabolism as well as inflammation. But it seems that for some bacterial groups, this is stabilized. But we need to explore further these individuals. So then the next question was whether there are association between improvement of bioclinical factors after bariatric surgery and some of these genera changes here. And this was the case. What you can see here on this heat map is that there are clear improvement. I mentioned that before, in factors related to body composition, glucose homeostasis, lipid profile, liver enzyme, or inflammatory parameters. And some down-regulated genera were basically positively associated with these changes, while others, upregulated, were negatively associated with these changes. And again, so we observed that the change in microbiota genera correlated with improved cardiometabolic factors. And again, when we adjust for food intake, in that case, total calories, about half of the correlation remains significant, meaning that everything is not explained by the change in food intake. The other observation that is could be seen as a witness of the dialogue between the gut microbiome and the host biology is about the adipose tissue. And indeed, what we had in this heat map of correlation, we had clear association between adipose tissue genes measured by microarrays and bacterial genus evaluated by paro sequencing. So again, we retrieve this group of bacteria, either downregulated or upregulated, and we had association with a series of function in the adipose tissue related to cell behavior, response to stress, cell growth, as well as energy changes. So as well as cell adhesion, you can see here on this cluster. So then we have seen from Rémy Burcelin in the previous talk that indeed there are associations between some bacterial groups in the adipose tissue and adipose tissue genes. Here it's association of genera coming from the gut. So, but the question is whether some of bacterial-derived components could be linked with the pathology of adipose tissue in human obesity. And we have shown in the last years that obese adipose tissue is characterized by hypertrophy, inflammatory cell accumulation, this with well-known Crohn-like structure of macrophages here, accumulation of lymphocytes as well as mast cells, and since it's a chronic disease, with time, there is also accumulation of fibrosis in human adipose tissue. So I guess the next step is really to understand what are the causal factors. And indeed, one issue with this type of studies in human is that correlation is not causation, and we need to go a little bit deeper on that. Again, this has been discussed in the previous talks, is that there are many changes induced by gastric bypass. Basically, people change their satiety, they modify their food choice, change not only the amount, but also the quality of food or their food. There are modification of pH, and that's probably an important factor that could be related to bacterial overgrowth. There is modification of motility and of bile acids, as well as modification of many incretins, such as GLPs. But it's also a very interesting model where you can address different type of questions related to physiology, comparing, for example, a purely restrictive intervention to restrictive and malabsorptive intervention. The question was assessed before about resilience, whether basically after surgery people try to keep some changes or have gut bacterial profile similar as before the surgery. There are issues related to diabetes resolution. We know that about 80 to 90% of this person improve diabetes after surgery, but a fraction basically don't resolve diabetes. And actually, diabetes can reappear a longer term after bariatric surgery. So I guess in that case, the study of the gut microbiome is quite interesting just to maybe answer to this question. So of course, one aspect is what are the gut microbiota derived factors that can contribute to this improvement? And again, there are some metabolites and TMAO and the link with cardiometabolic risk has been discussed. Factors like EPRates could contribute, as well as bacterial component. We have heard about LPS, structural lipids, some peptidoglycans, and probably there is more to be known about the different type of phospholipids that can be produced by the bacteria. Indeed, what has to be demonstrated, and we lack data in human, is really the intestine leak, and probably this to be explored deeper in vivo in human. So regarding a beneficial effect, I won't come back on this study that's been shown before. You know that our Netherlands colleague have showed that gut bacterial transfer can improve to some extent insulin sensitivity. However, in this study, the effect is not seen in everybody and it is relatively small, but I think it's an interesting model to go further. So in the field of a disease, especially obesity, where really we lack understanding and we lack treatment, I think this study of the gut microbiome has opened new avenues. There are probably links between intestine dysbiosis and host cardiometabolic phenotype, but we miss causality, especially in human. Diversity probably matters, and we need new models to study the gut microbiota. But we are still in the beginning, and we need to find the usual suspects. So I want to thank people here who contributed especially to the clinical studies, but not only, also to the analysis and bioinformatics analysis, such as Jean-Daniel Zucker and Aurélie Cotillard and Eddie Prifty, and also our close colleague at INRA, Dushko and Joël Doré's team, working together on studying the gut microbiota profile. And we follow this adventure in this Metacardis program with the objective of extending the study of the gut microbiota at large scale. So we are studying now 2,000 people in Europe at different stages of their cardiometabolic disease to find signature associated with the progression of this intimately linked pathologies. Thank you for your attention.